Hello, this is Marshall Latham, and this episode of the Outfield Excursions is brought to you by the Journey Into Patreon page, which I encourage you to go check out. We have lots of extra and early things that show up on the Patreon, and this episode of the Outfield Excursions, where Rish Outfield and I talk about the Atom Project, was out on Patreon like a month and a half ago. I think it was April 20th when it came out there, so you could have listened to this episode already if you were a Patreon member. And then just a couple days ago, I put up our latest episode of the Outfield Excursions, where Rish and I talk about The Third Man from 1947, starring Orson Welles and Joseph Cotten. And that was a lot of fun. You know, it's a classic film, and there's reasons for that. And we talk about all that stuff. So I encourage you to go over to patreon.com/journeyinto and look for that episode. You can get that at the $1 level. I also talk about Star Trek with Keith Techlitz at the $3 level. And then I talk about comic books in Comics Cave episodes, and that's at the $5 level. So pretty easy entry levels. You know, I'm not asking for too much, but even at the $1 level, there's a lot of extra stuff coming your way. So I encourage you to go on over there and check it out. But let's get on with today's episode, huh? All right. Roll it.
So, Rish, are we going to spoil this movie for our listeners today?
Oh, yeah, dude. We're going to spoil the crap out of this movie.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to be sure how far we were going to take it.
Well, let me put it this way. If we were talking about Empire Strikes Back today, we'd tell everybody that Darth Vader is Luke's father.
Ah, okay. So you're saying if we were talking about Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, we would just reveal that Dumbledore dies?
Yeah, now you got it. Look, and if we were talking about Man of Steel, we'd reveal how Clark saves his dad and the dog and everyone else from the tornado, and then he becomes this great hero and feels confident and secure about his powers and his identity.
Rish, that didn't happen. Clark's dad died in the tornado, and Clark didn't do anything to save him. He hid his powers from the world out of fear. And even when he becomes Superman, he never really truly feels accepted.
Oh, right. That's how that went. Thanks for the spoiler, man. Well, let's talk about today's movie.
Sorry, man. Yes, on to today's show. Be warned, folks, there will be spoilers. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Outfield Excursions. Yes, that's right. I said the Outfield Excursions.
I'm sorry, what? What was that?
The Outfield Excursions.
Well, see, that's what I thought you said, but what is that?
It's an old podcast where Rish Outfield and myself, Marshall Latham, would get together and talk about movies. So we thought we'd revive that old thing and come back at you with another episode. And we're actually, I think this is only the second time that we're talking about a movie that came out in the same year that we're recording.
Right. The other one was that radio set. Was it set in the early 60s?
Right.
I can't remember what it was called.
Was it Vast of Night or something like that?
It was called Project Atom. Sorry, when I was looking up this movie today, I was just like, Project Atom, and a bunch of other things came up, and I was like, I don't understand. Wait, it's new. Why didn't it come up first thing? And like, yeah, the sixth result was, were you looking for The Atom Project?
Yeah, The Atom Project. I think I heard one of the previews, but I never watched an actual preview for it. I knew Ryan Reynolds was in the movie, and that was about all I knew.
But is that all that you needed? Are you a big enough Reynolds fan that you're just like, oh, yeah, I'm in. That's cool.
I am. There's sometimes when he's just too much for me, but most of the time, yeah, I'm a fan of anything that he's in.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Ryan Reynolds, and I've told the story before that I worked on a movie of his early on, before he was the Ryan Reynolds, and then I met him again after he had done the Amityville Horror remake, and I talked to him for a little while there, and I'm a big fan. He was one of those guys where it's just like, this guy should be a star. This guy's great. He reminded me of Ferris Bueller in the movie, ironically enough, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, where he could be a real tool if he didn't have heart. Like, I got the impression that Ferris Bueller was one of those guys who liked everybody at the school and everybody liked him. And he wasn't mean to like the nerds or the jocks or the band guys or anything like that. He was just like, hey, Tom, looking good. Even if Tom wasn't looking good, it was something he'd say. And Tom would feel good about himself as Ferris Bueller walked down the hall. And I felt like that's what Reynolds was like in person. He was a really, he was funny and he was handsome, but he was a decent guy. And, you know, he's Canadian and they tend to be like that, Justin Bieber notwithstanding. And yeah, the career that he's had, Ryan Reynolds has had, has basically been him playing himself in movie after movie after movie. And yes, it's himself as an assassin, or it's himself with a healing factor, or it's himself working for Sandra Bullock, except for in Free Guy, where he did not play himself. And I absolutely loved Free Guy. I loved that movie. I wish I were watching it right now instead of podcasting. But
I did enjoy that one as well. That was pretty good.
But that came out last year in 2021, even though it was supposed to come out, in, you know, the year before. And the guy that directed it, Sean Levy got together with Ryan Reynolds immediately after, and they did another project, and now they're getting together and doing a Deadpool movie together. And so when I saw, the guy that directed Free Guy is doing another movie with Ryan Reynolds, I was in. But when I heard the premise of the movie, I don't know, whatever is past, I was in. I was just like, yes, I will definitely go to see this. But the problem was, it was only playing at Cinemark theaters because it's a movie made for Netflix.
Right.
But they had a window where you could see it cinematically if you wanted to, so that, you know, that it would qualify for awards consideration and things like that. And then also, yeah, there are people like me, there are gray beards like me who want to see movies in the theater, who foolishly say that's how movies were intended to be seen. And so this movie was coming out, and even though I knew it was going to premiere on Netflix, which I already pay to subscribe to, so I could watch it for free, I told my nephews, hey, let's get in the car and we'll go and we'll see this new Ryan Reynolds movie. And they didn't care. They didn't want to. And I said, well, come on, it'll be really fun. It's a time travel thing. I told them the premise. And they're like, oh, okay. You know, it's like, oh, boy. The things I ask of my nephews, it's cruel and unusual, really. And the day that we decided to go, it had been dropped from all the theaters except for one that wasn't even in this county. It was about a 45-minute drive if I wanted to see it. And I was determined. I was just like, I want to see this movie. It sounds up my alley. But the kids hemmed and hawed and it's like, eh. And the 11-year-old said, did you know that you can just watch that movie for free on Netflix? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, we should do that. And I thought, well, that's the most enthusiasm I'm going to get out of him. And I said, yeah, good idea. Let's do that. So we ended up watching it in the living room, just, you know, on the couch together. But I don't know if your kids are like this. It's such a struggle to get the cell phone out of their hand, or the Nintendo Switch out, or to get them to like focus on the screen. And that's part of why I wanted to take them to the cinema.
Right.
It's because none of that stuff is allowed there, or it shouldn't be. And you're forced to look at the larger than life screen and pay attention to the movie. I would rather see anything on the big screen. But anyway, to be continued, we ended up just watching it on television.
Yeah, that's how I watched it too, with my family. Well, I guess it was just my wife and my son. My daughter was at work and my son was sleeping because he had to get up early and work. My older one, oldest. And so, yeah, exactly like you said, even though he's 16 now and he wanted to watch the movie, he likes Ryan Reynolds. And so he wanted to watch the movie, but yeah, he can't not have his phone while he's watching something. And so you don't know if he's enjoying it or not, but if he starts making comments, then I know, okay, he's engaged and paying attention, even though he doesn't have. And so I'll try to include some of his comments as we go through.
Oh, really? You took notes? That's great, man.
No, I didn't. But I remember a couple of them at least.
So just one more thing. This guy, Sean Levy, that directed this movie, I'm looking at his filmography, and boy, it is hit and miss.
It is, yeah. I looked at it too.
Well, the first movie I ever heard of that he directed was called Big Fat Liar, which was Frankie Muniz and Amanda Bynes against adults. So that's not something I need to see. He did Just Married that had Ashton Kutcher, so I didn't need to see that. He did a remake of Cheaper by the Dozen and a remake of The Pink Panther, both with Steve Martin. He played The Pink Panther and The Dozen, I think, in those two movies. No, neither of those is accurate. Then he did Night at the Museum. Now, I actually saw that in the theater. I saw The Pink Panther, too. But, boy, I hated Night at the Museum. Boy, it was one of those where it's just like, I wish I had bought a shake. I wish they sold shakes at the theater so I could throw it at the screen. But they don't. So I settled for a Slurpee. And then that was such a big hit that he did Night at the Museum 2, Battle of the Smithsonian, which I did not see because I learned. I was old enough to learn. But then he did Date Night with Steve Carell and Tina Fey, and I really liked that movie.
Oh, yeah.
And he did Real Steel with Hugh Jackman and the boxing robot, and I really liked that movie. He did The Internship. Oh, well, that's not the movie that I thought it was. This is a Vince Vaughn, Owen Wilson movie. Really? How many movies have those guys done together? I didn't know that one. Huh. He did This Is Where I Leave You, which is my buddy Jeff's, one of his favorite movies. It depressed me, but that's okay. I didn't hate it. He did a third Night at the Museum movie, this one called Secret of the Tomb, which was on the other day, and I threw my shake at the television. And then nothing until Free Guy in 2021, which was my favorite movie of 2021, and then Adam Project in 2022.
Yeah, and apparently he directed some episodes of Stranger Things as well.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Yeah, you know, like a couple every episode or every season he would do, it seems like.
So. You and I should talk about Stranger Things sometime.
So yeah, there's some good, there's some bad. The one I thought was interesting. Oh, that's not the one I thought it was either. Never mind. I was going to talk about Just in Time.
His first movie that he made was called Just in Time. And I did click on it because I thought, oh, I'll bet that's a time travel movie. But it doesn't appear to be.
No, I was thinking it was that weird one. Do you remember there was that time travel? Or I guess it wasn't time travel, but there was one with Justin Timberlake.
Oh, I believe that was called In Time, right? Where everybody In had a time. Clock and they were all the same age, but and you had to buy more time, right? Because when your counter exactly. ran out, you would die. I loved the premise of that movie. I thought it was just a really excellent premise. Unfortunately, they cast a singer and dancer as the lead. And so yeah. I did not enjoy the film. Was it called In Time? What was that movie called?
I think so.
Well, okay. I'll take your word for it. It was In Time.
It was either In Time was either that movie or that was the one with
I know what you're
General Hux in it.
Right. Where his dad reveals to him that they're able to travel back in time. Who played his dad? Bill Nighy played his dad. That was a really solid flick. I thought that one was called About Time.
Oh, it probably was.
But it could have been called In Time, and the Justin Timberlake movie was About Time. Neither of which were directed by Sean Levy.
Sean Levy. Yeah, he directed the movie we're talking about, Atom Time. No, The Atom Project is what we're talking about. Yeah, and it's got quite a few. I don't know if we want to hit the cast members now or hit them as they show up in the movie.
How many Marvel characters have been played by the cast of The Atom Project?
At least two.
Oh, you can do better maybe than more. That.
Oh, the three. Yes, that's
yeah, you can even go one further than
that. Really? Well, okay, four. Yeah, there you go. Sometimes I try to forget about that fourth one. But.
Oh, all right.
So anyway, should we? Do you want to jump into the movie or?
No, I just want to talk about other stuff. I wanted to mention that aside from the Star Wars trilogy, my favorite movie is Back to the Future. And it came out at the perfect time for me. I just loved everything about that, from the score to the cast to the premise. I oh my gosh. And I feel like the movie that was most influenced, The Atom Project, had to have been Back to the Future. There are so many parallels and little, well, parallels, I guess, is the word that I'm looking for, where you can say, oh, you know, Back to the Future might have been like that if they had zagged instead of zigged.
Yeah.
And I probably have told you this before, the Back to the Future began when Bob Zemeckis and Bob Gale were having a conversation, one of those, you know, late night drinking things, where he said, you think if you went back in time and met your dad in high school, that the two of you would have been friends? And they had this big conversation about of what would happen and what the, you know, what if you found out that your parents weren't anything like when they were young, they were just like you, but they're, you know, that they grew up and changed and all that stuff. And it set alive their imagination. And there's so many little things like that in The Atom Project that I wish I liked the movie more. Go ahead and give us the premise, or go through the story of The Atom Project.
Okay, I'll do my best. It starts out right away with action. We have Ryan Reynolds in a jet flying up out of the atmosphere into space. So it's more of a spaceship, I guess, than a jet, but it looks a lot like a jet and flies like a jet. And he's being pursued by others. You know, they're asking him what he thinks he's doing. He says he's stealing the ship, and they said, we can track you. He says, no, you can't. And something happens to their tracker, and he's been shot. And then this little cannon comes out of the bottom of his ship and shoots in front of him and creates this wormhole, and he flies through it and disappears. And so that's kind of our opening scene right away. And it doesn't really... The pacing of this movie is just from the beginning all the way through. I mean, there are some little side things going on, but a lot of it's, man, it's just directly pushing through the plot. And so he ends up crash landing after he gets through the other side of the wormhole. And we found, and that was in the year 2050. And so what's that? 28 years from now. And then when it shows him crash landing, it's 2022, so present day. And we also, in 2022, we see this young kid in school. He's getting beat up. He's got a big mouth on him, and that gets him in a lot of trouble. And his mom has to, he gets suspended from school. His mom has to pick him up. And his mother is played by Jennifer Garner. You know, she doesn't know what to do with him. We find out his dad passed away about a year ago, and he doesn't treat his mom very well. He's got a big mouth with her as well, smart mouth. And she just kind of takes it, you know, because she knows he's in pain and whatnot. But then we find out that, so I never told you the name of the character that Ryan Reynolds was playing. It's Adam Reed. We find out that Adam Reed crash landed in the backyard. I mean, it's kind of out in the forest, out away from the city or anything. but pretty much in this young kid's backyard. The young kid is named Adam, too, and not to draw things out too far, it's basically his 12-year-old self. Ryan Reynolds is 12-year-old self. But it takes the kid a while to realize that, but he comes in the house, he knows everything about the house, he knows the dog and all these things, and instead of freaking out, the kid thinks it's pretty cool that he's meeting his older self, and hey, you turned out pretty good, you're ripped, that kind of stuff. And so there was a lot of really good moments, I think, between the two of them.
Wait, bullet? You were shot?
Yeah, no, actually, no. I was stabbed with a bullet. What do you think, you moron?
I'm the moron. You're the one who was shot.
Okay, that's it. That's weird. It farts when I cough.
Gross.
Super gross. I'm gonna go upstairs. I'm gonna grab some stuff. Stay cool. You can trust me.
That's easy for you to say. I'm the one who ends up in a therapist's office telling them about where the bad man touched me.
Oh, God, that's where you go? Immediately, you are dark, man.
Who even are you?
That is classified.
Why are you here?
Also classified.
Are you in the Air Force?
When I say classified, what is your brain here? Chocolate?
What's with the lightsaber?
It's not a lightsaber. Jesus Christ, Adam, I need you to play it cool. I know that playing it cool isn't really your thing.
How do you know my name?
The older Adam Reed is very perturbed by his younger self. He's like, oh, I can't believe I was like that and stuff like that. And so there was a lot of fun stuff going on with that, I thought. Is there anything you wanted to talk about from that part of the movie?
Well, did you know that the kid that we're introduced to is Ryan Reynolds as a boy? You said you didn't see the trailer.
Right. I didn't see the trailer. So I didn't know right away. I figured it out before, it was the reveal in the movie. Pretty much when he showed up and was in the back shed or whatever, and the dog came in and was laying next to him. I figured, oh, okay. This is his younger self kind of thing. But it took a little longer for the movie to reveal that. But I think we were supposed to kind of figure that out.
Well, I felt like it was interesting. The kid, the child actor, obviously has been directed to speak like Ryan Reynolds and use like his same cadence of talking and the same kind of snark that Ryan Reynolds has. And I felt like it was kind of charming, but I don't think we're supposed to. I think we're supposed to think that this kid is kind of a dick to his mom.
Which he was.
You can tell that the mom is suffering. And she's struggling to keep her head above water. And the boy is constantly getting in trouble at school or is acting out. And, he doesn't help out around the house. So, he's in that way, he's pretty realistic, I guess. But
yeah.
But the older self, the Ryan Reynolds version, like gives him a really hard time about that. And he's like, hey, you can't talk to your mom that way. It's like, would it kill you, to help out? Would what she needs from you is this and that, and you're not willing to give it to her. I really liked that stuff, and I liked the interaction between him and his younger self, and I wish the whole movie had been that.
And there was a really cool scene between Jennifer Garner and Ryan Reynolds in a bar where she just needed to go grab a drink because she was stressed out or whatever, and he was in there. And he tries to stay out of it. He tries to just leave her alone, but he has to start talking to her, and he tries to comfort her and tells her all these things that just really makes her day, or, you could really deep felt for her.
You're right, though. Teenage boys are horrible. It's like living with a urinal cake that yells at you. Mother said these are the ones who take the hit.
Mm. Yeah.
But I'll tell you something. Mm. Boys always come back for their mamas.
That's nice. It sounds like you're speaking from experience.
I am.
You have a good mom.
I do.
Mom.
I have the best mom.
I started to get worried that it was going to go the direction of, is she going to like fall in love with him and he's going to have to try to avoid her or something like that. I'm glad it didn't go there, but I started thinking that was going to happen.
Yeah, well, there was definitely a connection between them in the bar, and they obviously chose not to go in that direction. But yeah, that's, you know, another parallel to Back to the Future in a way, actually.
Yeah,
and he explains some things to the boy. So he's been injured. You said that he got shot, and he's not able to fly his ship unless he is completely healthy, and the ship will only respond to his thumbprint. I believe it was thumbprint, but maybe it was fingerprint.
His DNA, I believe.
It scans him, and because he's injured, he can't activate the ship. But he can use his younger self to activate the ship because his younger self is not injured, and he has the same DNA. And then turn on the like self-repair diagnostic thing on the ship. And apparently they have the technology in 2050 to do that with him as well. His body is like healing itself of the bullet wound.
Right. And they just need time.
But that sort of necessitates that they have to spend a little bit of time together while the ship repairs itself and while he repairs himself. And that was clever.
Yeah.
So he's able to explain to the boy what the situation is and that the future is not a great place. And something happened to change the future. And I feel like he tries not to give him too many details. And that's, you know, that's normal, I suppose, in a time travel film. But the details come out. And probably the most important detail is that adult Adam used to have a wife and he loved her and she died. And I think it was 2 years ago for him.
Yeah.
But she died in a plane accident with the exact same kind of ship that he came in. And it's really torn him up. You can tell he's like, you know, I'm super happy that I got to meet her and fall in love. But, you know, I'm not the same person now that she's gone. You know, she was my whole life kind of thing, which I thought was neat. And, you know, it's obviously setting things up and you can put two and two together. You can figure out, oh, okay, what's going to happen. And that it, in itself, the whole, I lost my wife, but then I went back in time to where she's not dead, could be in a movie in and of itself as well. It's a big enough premise with enough like emotional complexity and facets to it and all that is a movie right there.
Well, and I think he also reveals that he was trying to get to the year 2018, but because he got out of there in such a hurry and was injured and stuff and getting fired on while he was trying to escape that, you know, he got as close as he could. And that was 2022. You know, you talked about Back to the Future and definitely there's influences from Back to the Future. But again, like a lot of these movies that we get, I think there was also just a lot of trying to hit a lot of those 80s tones. Cause I kind of got an ET vibe, you know, when he first crash landed and the kid was out with the flashlight trying to find what was going on by himself. And then he found him in the old shed and that kind of thing. I really kind of got into this part of the movie. One thing I forgot to talk about with the young Adam is the name of the actor that plays him is Walker Scobble, I'm guessing, or Scobble.
Okay.
And this is his first movie.
Oh, okay.
He had, which kind of blew me away. I thought he was a pretty good actor. I mean, not perfect or anything, but I thought he really did a good job. Is now even more considering it's his first movie. Definitely was good at mimicking Ryan Reynolds, like you had said previously. And I wondered though, do you think because their eyes looked, you know, they have the same eyes color and look and everything. I wondered if that was an effect that his eyes looked just like Ryan Reynolds' eyes. But
well, yeah, it's totally possible that they found a kid that, you know, could pass as Ryan Reynolds, you know, 30 years ago, then dyed their hair to make sure that they're the exact same color and gave one of them contacts to match the other just so that they're all the closer. And then, of course, they trained this kid to talk like Ryan Reynolds would, to deliver his lines the way that Ryan Reynolds would. You know, Forrest Gump was the opposite of that. I don't know if you remember, but Tom Hanks got around this child actor that played young Forrest Gump and tried to imitate the way that he talked with this really, really weird, you know, the Alabama accent, and you should go back to Greenbow, Alabama. And and that it was basically him talking like the child, and they got the same haircut, and it worked out pretty well on that. And so, yeah, it just
it did. Yeah.
But I had never seen this kid before in anything. And now I guess I know why.
Yeah. I mean, like not no TV, no nothing. Just this is it. This is his first big act. I'm sure he's done other things. But anyway, getting back to the plot, I guess things change pretty quickly when the people that were pursuing him catch up to him.
When the Imperial Stormtroopers arrive?
When the Stormtroopers arrive, yeah. And they got a really neat-looking guy. No. I'm trying to find the name of the guy that was the...
I think his name's Alex Mulari.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah, he's like multi-ethnic. He doesn't... Yeah, he's an interesting-looking guy I've not seen before.
Yeah, and he plays a character named Christos. And... You know, it's almost, you know, I think he has a vendetta against Adam and things like that. But the main boss that's running things is this Maya Sorian. And we'll find out more about her. She's played by Catherine Keener, who I know I've seen in things, but I have no idea what. But anyway, they show up in a jet and have all of these stormtroopers that transport in and start fighting him. And one of the cool things I thought was, you know, when the young Adam and the old Adam first met, you know, young Adam's going through his bag and stuff, and he says, "Hey, what's this, a lightsaber?" And he's like, "No, that's not a lightsaber." And then when old Adam starts fighting with all these guys, he pulls this thing out, pops out these, you know, like a double-bladed light. It's not an actual energy lightsaber, but you know, it has energy to it and it lights up. And he's like, "Dude, that is a lightsaber." I thought that was pretty funny. But yeah, he's, you know, he's fighting all these guys and he's doing really well and protecting the kid and all that kind of stuff. But then the jet shows up and it's looking pretty grim that he's going to get caught. And then out of nowhere, there's gunfire coming from the forest providing cover for the Adams, and they're able to escape and get away. And it turns out that Adam's wife, Laura, is the person that's showing up to save them at this point. And Laura is played by Zoe Saldana. And so, yeah, here we go. The gang's getting together. At this point, my son said, "Man, is everybody in this movie?" So yes, that's kind of a turning point for it. And she has this Bronco or whatever, and they escape and are able to get away through the forest. And she has a hideout near a lake, and she's been hiding out for 2 years. She wasn't killed in 2018. She's been hiding out, and now she's here and must have figured out that Adam was here and came to his rescue.
Yeah, she's actually pretty sweet and kind, and that is not how Zoe Saldana usually... those aren't the parts that they give to her.
Right.
And I was happy for the older Ryan Reynolds that his wife is alive again, and there are a couple of moments. Like you said, the movie moves at a very fast pace, and it's got four different movies worth of plot in it. I've mentioned two so far, but there are a couple of moments where it stops so that you can have human interaction between the characters. And that's what I responded to the most. There is a moment where he is reunited with his dead wife and they have like a conversation, and he's just, you know, a different person. He's so happy to be with her again.
Yeah.
And you really feel that. I dug that. His younger self is sort of a third wheel in that scene. But yeah, she's just been been living stuck in the past, in what is to her the past, for all this time.
I had to follow protocol, you know, live out my life here, avoid contact, minimize my footprint, and hope you were crazy enough to come look for me.
Alone? All this time? 4 years.
That's the job, right?
Yeah. But baby.
It's fine. I got used to being alone.
Not anymore. Hey. I found you. I found you.
You found me.
Do they reveal that when they went back in time that Sorian tried to kill her, or, you know, or sabotaged her or her time machine?
Yeah, at this point, they do reveal that Sorian went back to 2018 and she was changing time, which is, of course, against the rules. You can't change time, but she went back and changed time so that she would get power over the time travel technology. And we find out that Adam's father was the inventor of the, accidentally discovered time travel through this project, the Adam Project. That's where the name comes from, that he was working on back in 2018 and before, obviously. But whatever Sorian did to when she went back in time, she was able to get power of all that. Laura had found out about it, had seen it. I can't remember if she was on some other mission or whatever, or if she was spying specifically on Sorian because she suspected her of something. But she had figured it out, and she was going to go back and take care of it. And then Sorian had her killed, or tried to kill her, and thought she was dead. And then they blamed it on some kind of an accident or whatever. So, yeah, all that plot is revealed. And she says, Laura says, that they need to go back and to stop it again. But, of course, the bad guys have tracked them, and they're heading to the location of this hideout. And so Laura tells him that he needs to go, that he needs to get in his ship, and he needs to go back to 2018 and figure this out, and that she's going to stay back and hold him off at the hideout. And he knows what that means. He knows he's going to lose her. He knows she will be killed this time. But she forces him to promise that he'll do it, and he does. And, the kid at this point, he's just trying to figure everything out and doesn't, he's not old enough to understand all the emotions that are, I'm sure he understands some of it, but he doesn't quite understand all the emotions that are going on. But they take off in the Bronco, and Laura does hold them off for quite a while. They think that Adam is still there in her house, but then they find out that he's not. And yep, she does get killed off screen. it's imminent.
They've written it in a way where adult Adam has to agree with her, because she can't fly his ship. Only he can go back. It's set for his DNA. And so as much as he would like to be the one that sacrifices himself, it has to be him. And I like that, taking the choice out of his hands. But she also says something like, if you succeed in your mission, then this whole timeline will change, and that we can be together again. And so there's like a hopefulness to that, the idea of the timeline has already been ruined by somebody going back and with greed or, ambition or murder, changed the way things that were supposed to be. So if you go back and prevent that from happening, then we will be together again. I won't have to sacrifice myself. It's just a really clever way of looking at time and causality.
Yeah.
And I guess a way that he is able to justify, okay, I'm going to leave her probably to die so that I can fulfill this mission and fix everything, and she won't have died.
And they can meet again.
Yeah, they have a scene where he explains to the boy how they first met and they were in college, and she came into the wrong class and sat down next to him, and he told her he would walk her to the right class, and it was sort of love at first sight, and it's just like the opening scene of Back to the Future. Yeah, you felt sorry for him, so you decided to go with him to the Fish Under the Sea dance. No, it was the Enchantment Under the Sea dance, our first date. It was the night of that terrible thunderstorm. Remember, George? All of those lines are setting up something that will pay off later. It was just like that.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of those moments. I mean, I'm a sucker for a time travel movie in the first place, or story in the first place. So, yeah, a lot of those things I really appreciated about this show. So they are able to escape and go back in time to 2018. However, Sorian knows where they're going, and so it's not going to take long for her to catch up with them. So they have to act fast, and older Adam pretty much reveals, says, you need to come with me to the younger kid. And so they go together, and the plan is to go meet their dad, and they have to convince him to help them destroy time travel. But at this point, their dad, Lewis, doesn't even know that it's time travel thing. He just thinks he's working on this collider reactor, whatever it is, arc reactor, maybe, for the science of it. He's trying to figure these things out, and this is what leads to time travel. And so they go, and of course, their dad is played by Mark Ruffalo. So there's our fourth Marvel alumni. But at some point, everybody's going to be a Marvel alumni. So that won't be such a unique thing anymore. So they do meet up with him, and he catches on right away Adam is.
That's a great moment. They go to his class, right? He's teaching a physics lecture at the college, and they just walk in, and he looks over and he sees adult Adam watching him, and he sort of squints, and then class lets out and he goes, "Adam?" And that was really unexpected. You didn't have to have a 5-minute scene of answering trivia questions and things like that to prove that you are who you are. He just knew. And I really liked that too.
Well, he did make a comment in the class.
Oh, that's right. He raises his hand and he quotes Guy Lombardi, I think.
Right. Yeah. And so that was probably one clue, but he kind of knew it before that. He kind of recognized him anyway. So I thought that was done really well. All the stuff, with the father and the son stuff, because, they were grieving. Well, older Adam had longer, but still had a lot of hang-ups and unfinished business with his dad dying and abandoning, in his mind at that point, he turned it to where his dad had abandoned him or whatever. And the younger kid, only lost his dad a year ago. And so there's a lot of good conversations and emotions going on in their conversations. But at the same time, it's frustrating because their dad is so caught up in the science of everything and the ethical thing, and I can't do this and I can't do that. And they're trying to tell him that everything's going to go sideways. And, he's not having it. So he's not going to help them break in. And Sorian, in the past, was like his benefactor. She was funding all of his work, and because she owned this energy company or science company, I'm not sure quite what it was, and so he didn't quite believe them either, that she was this evil person. And so he goes home, and I really liked the scene where he goes home in 2018 and interacts with Jennifer Garner, his wife, and an even younger Adam, but not really too much with the kid, the 8-year-old or whatever, however old he was. So I guess he would have been like 10. But he wants to do more with his family. He realizes that he hasn't been there for his family, and he wants to be. And I don't know. That really touched me too, because it was like, I could feel his pain there, like there's so much things that I wish I could have done different with my kids or my family or jobs that I took that maybe it would have been better if I would have stayed where I was and I would have been able to spend more time at home with the kids and my wife and that kind of thing. So I knew where he was coming, or I felt where he was coming from on that.
Well, see, there's movie number three, and there's a part where they talk about throwing the baseball, where the 12-year-old version remembers his dad coming home from work, and no matter how tired he was, he would throw the baseball in the backyard with him. And yeah. Adult Adam doesn't remember this at all. He only has resentment that his dad cared about his job and not about his family, and his dad wasn't there for him, and he needed a dad. And I found that scene to be really, really interesting, that the two, even though they're the same person, you know, one feels something completely different about his father. And I think Reynolds, the older Adam, has to realize that, you know, his dad didn't know he was going to die. His dad thought that he would have his whole life to be there for his family.
Right.
And, you know, maybe he made some bad choices, but, you know, he did the best that he could. And I think that he comes to understand his father more than he ever did in his life during this time when it's getting to see him and hearing his child self talk about good times that he had blocked out or chosen to forget.
You made yourself hate him because it was easier than missing him. And I remember some stuff that you maybe don't want to.
Oh, yeah? Like what?
You played catch with us almost every night.
Catch?
He'd get home from work, be so tired. I'd be in the yard throwing the ball against the pitchback. You remember the pitchback, right?
Oh, I remember the pitchback. Yeah, he bought it so he didn't have to play with me.
Nope. He bought it because they had one in the window of Altman's. And every time we passed that store, I begged him to buy it for me. So that's what Dad did. But he'd see me throwing in the yard, and no matter how tired he was, he'd always grab his mitt to come out for a catch.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff I really enjoyed and appreciated. But we got to get to the end, so.
Well, unfortunately, I guess we do. This movie was really schizophrenic. It wanted to be all things to all people, and you can't. So it would want to be like this really fun time travel adventure, and then it wanted to be an action movie with killing and chases and explosions. And then it wanted to be like this personal drama about family and second chances. And you can't be all of these things. So every time that it became a different movie, I would be frustrated, especially when it started becoming just an ordinary special effects explosion movie with gunfights and lightsabers and stormtroopers. And when you kill one of these guys from the future, they turn into, like, I don't know, embers or something like that. Their bodies disintegrate. And it's just right. Like, why spend so much more money on that? And it's, you know, because they wanted to appeal to the people that like special effects and like action sequences and stuff like that. And I felt like the movie probably cost twice what it should have cost if it had half the budget or a third the budget that it did. I would have liked it a lot more. And the final act of the film is all spectacle and all, you know, huge special effects and fights and yep. All that stuff. And the final act is the part that works the least. But yeah, they end up going to his father's project, to the Adam Project, which he named after his son. And it's this gargantuan, it's the size of the Starship Enterprise underground.
It's V'ger.
With an arc reactor and technology that we've never seen before. And, you know, just a scale unlike anything you could build It can only be done in special effects. And we get to see the younger... What's the evil character's name? She has a great name. Saurian?
Saurian. Maya Saurian.
We get the younger, the like 20-something Saurian. But instead of just, you know, casting a young actress, they did the digital de-aging thing. And it doesn't work right at all. She looks like a monster, a Martian. She looks like a ghost or something. You're just like, well, what is wrong with her face? And I feel like here is like film number four. She doesn't seem to be corrupt and evil, but her older self is like the devil on her shoulder, constantly telling her, you know, no, we need to do this so that you can consolidate power. We need to do this so that our enemies suffer, kind of that. And she's like, well, enemies? And it seems to be that she is a person that has high ideals and wants to help the world. And at some point, she went down a dark path and became this supervillain.
Yeah, felt that she was overlooked or whatever.
But we never really know anything about that. Apparently, in 2050, she's like Hitler, or, you know, she's the most powerful person on the planet. But the planet is in a terrible place. We don't see it, but they talk about it a little bit like that. And this was something else that I was like, oh, now this is interesting, because she would say something like, well, we need to kill them. And her younger self would be like, wait, what? We don't kill people. And I was like, oh, now that's interesting. Because eventually the older version is going to alienate the younger version, to where the younger version is like, I don't want to become what you are. I felt like that's where they were going, because they set up all of the dominoes in that direction with this, just like, I mean, because she was cartoonishly evil. And I guess, yeah, you know, you cast Catherine Keener to play somebody who is evil, because, you know, she's one of those people that only plays bad characters. But that's not where they went. It's fine. I understand that it was an action film, and so we have to have disintegrating stormtroopers, and we have to have all sorts of martial arts fights. And yeah, I didn't let you spill it, but yeah, that it is a lightsaber, essentially, this weapon that he has from the 50s, from the future.
Yeah, you know, I don't even know if we need to go into much detail of how the action happens. But yeah, essentially they break into the Saurian facility and go underground. Their dad does come and help them in the end. He decides he needs to help them. So all three of them are there. There's a couple things that really bothered me about the plot at the end. I mean, aside from just the craziness of it. So young Adam, he gives him a drone. So his job is to cover Ryan Reynolds to get into the facility, and he has this drone. The younger one is controlling this drone, and he's taking out the guys as they come out, and of course the older Adam is as well. And so that's kind of a cool thing in and of itself. And then the dad shows up, and then they go inside and just leave the kid out there with the drone or whatever. And I just, as soon as they went in the building, I'm like, well, of course, the younger Adam is going to get kidnapped, because he's just out there by himself, unprotected. You know, what were they thinking with that? And of course, that's exactly what happens. And so Saurian has this ace in the hole or whatever when she finally catches up with him in the reactor or whatever. And then I thought it was funny, because something happens and the reactor starts going side. Well, they pull out the hard drive or whatever for this thing. And so things start to go a little bit crazy with the reactor, and metal is, you know, attracted to it. Everything's being pulled in, kind of thing. But I thought it was funny the whole time. Mark Ruffalo, as this scientist or whatever, he's at the computer and he's just looking around and looking at the screen and reacting to everything, but he's doing practically nothing. Of course, Ryan Reynolds is fighting everybody off and trying to get to this and that to save the day. And I just thought it was funny that Mark Ruffalo pretty much did nothing but react to the explosions and what was going on, and had to duck to not get hit by a wrench that was going by or something like that. But he like the action-y part of it made it look like he was a big part of it, but all he was doing was typing on the keyboard and staring at the screen and whatever. I just thought that was pretty funny. But I guess the point of that is eventually they're on this catwalk or whatever in front of the reactor, and Sorian tells her younger self, you know, to shoot Lewis and, you know, get this over with. And she won't do it. She says, you might be my future self, but I am not who you are, and steps away. And so then the older Sorian grabs the gun and she's going to shoot. And Mark Ruffalo Lewis steps in front of his sons and points out that it's an armor piercing bullet, so they should spread out, because if it'll go through him, it'll get them or whatever. So it kind of lay in the road for what's going to happen. And so eventually she does shoot to kill Lewis, but because it's an armor piercing bullet, which all bullets are metal, but I thought that was kind of weird. But it goes toward Lewis, but then the reactor pulls and changes the direction of the bullet, and it shoots the younger Sorian and kills her. So eventually the older Sorian doesn't exist anymore because she was killed back in the past. And then that really throws the reactor into an explosion and they have to escape, and everything's done at that point as far as the action part of everything. And I mean, it's exciting to watch, and you don't know what's going to happen, but at the same time, it's like, okay, we just got to get through this bit to get to the end of the movie at this point. But then that leads to so the past is fixed basically, and things are going to go back to the way they were. And there's more scenes that they don't just leave it at that. They follow up on some of these relationships and things that, themes, I guess, that they've set up. So that was nice that they did that. We have the Adams and their dad going back to their house and playing a game of catch with a baseball. And that was really neat. And their conversation was fun to listen to. But it was a good scripting, good dialogue, good part of the movie.
Look, Dad, there's something that we need to tell you.
I already know. I knew the moment I saw you. I'm sorry, boys. I'm sorry that I'm not going to be there for you down the road. And I've given it a lot of thought, but you cannot tell me how or when it happens. You came back here because no one has a right to change a future, including us.
It's your future.
No. You're my future. Both of you. And how lucky am I that I got to see it. I haven't been there for you, and I'm sorry, but I saw you being born. I watched you take your first breath. And after that happens, nothing is ever the same again. You're my son, Adam, and I love you.
Do you want to talk about the thing with Laura and Adam at the end?
I've already set it up. It basically, the timeline continues, but as it should already have been. And we get to see when they were in college and she goes into the wrong class and sits next to him, and he just like lights up. And I don't know if it's just love at first sight or if he somehow remembers, because does he not remember his adult self coming back in time? And I mean, does Lewis still die in a car accident? Or
I think so. Well, they don't answer those questions, but I mean, they do, you know, they're playing catch in the backyard, and then the two Adams do disappear, and Lewis is there by himself in 2018. And so I guess the assumption is that they went back to their regular timelines and everything happened as it did previously. But they don't really answer those questions in the movie.
But anyhow, yeah, he sees Zoe Saldana and he's just like, oh, hey. And they joke a little bit and to each other. And then he says, hey, I'll walk you to your class, or to the rest of your life kind of thing. And they get up and leave the room together. And that's the end of the movie, right?
Yeah, that's the end. So I thought it was nice that they tied some of those things up. But you're right. I mean, this movie had a lot of good moments, but it is kind of a scattershot all over the place kind of thing. And I wish they could have brought Jennifer Garner into it more. I mean, she was there a lot in the beginning and in some of the middle scenes there. But yeah, it would have been kind of neat to involve her more in that. But again, that's another piece that you have to bring into this thing that already has so many things going on, threads that you can't fit all that in. So
no, the only way to satisfy all of these plot threads is if it was one of those 10 episode series kind of thing, you know, mini series. There were just so many possible time travel stories and interesting interactions and interesting characters. Everybody got short shrift. I wondered where Zoe Saldana was in 2018, because she was in the past. I expected her to pop up again, you know, but she doesn't. And yeah, Jennifer Garner, she has like two lines after the initial scenes with her, or after that bar scene, I guess. And it's just, well, she's outlived her usefulness in the story. And that was too bad, because he regretted that he wasn't a better son to her. And oh, I guess we do get a scene in 2022 where it's morning and he's got to go to school, and he like puts his arm around his mom.
Oh, that's
which
true.
He did not do in the first scenes of the film. And she, you know, she all but tells him, "Hey, I kind of need a hug right now," and he won't give it to her. And so that, you know, that's nice. It was them setting things up and paying them off, Back to the Future style. I feel like there were way too many. Maybe it was like a trilogy of Back to the Future movies shoved into one movie.
Yeah.
And part of the problem was the end credits start and you see all of these names for screenwriters. And usually that is a sign that there have been a lot of chefs on this particular meal. There are a lot of people's throwing in their two cents. And for the most part, that's too bad. You know, you need somebody whose vision it is, somebody who's, you know, really passionate about the story. And too many cooks can ruin the broth, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, again, because I was thought there'd be a payoff for, you know, in the beginning of the movie, young Adam was getting beat up, and then at one point, the older Adam helped him out, or tried to help him out and teach him how to fight or win against this boy or whatever. And then he threatened the boy. And I thought there was going to be a scene where younger Adam finally sticks up for himself and you know, does something to this bully or something. But we didn't see that either. But again,
there was just no room.
That would have been one more little thing to throw in at the end that they probably just couldn't fit in. All in all, I enjoyed watching it. I thought it was a lot of fun and enjoyed all the characters and the whatever. But yeah, I was getting a little lost in there. And especially that last, you know, they always talk about the problem with the third act of the story. And it wasn't really, I don't know if it was the third act, but it was the end of the movie. And it was just a lot going on. And I think they almost felt like they had to finish it that way. They had to end with a big action scene at the end, but they probably didn't have to.
Yeah, I feel like the human aspect of the film worked better than all of the sci-fi action adventure aspects of the film, but that was the priority to them, was the effects, was the spectacle, and that's too bad.
And that's probably how they sold it, right? To get it greenlit in the first place.
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, that's how you get actors of this caliber, I guess, to sign on. But
does Ryan Reynolds have like a contract with Netflix? Like, you know, some of these actors do? Because this is the second one this year that he's done for Netflix. He did that
Red
Notice. That's
right. He did Red Notice as well. It's possible that he has some kind of deal with them, but I didn't think so.
Yeah, it seems like he's in everything right now.
Yeah, he's striking when the iron is hot. And
yeah, that's good, I guess.
It is. You know, he's not a kid anymore, and so maybe he's aware that his career might not be as hot 5 years from now as it is right now. It's hard to say on things like that. You know, for an actress, they tend to have very narrow windows in which they are seen to be marketable, you know, and it's, you know, it's unfair that for actresses it works that way. I mean, unless you're Sigourney Weaver or unless you're Meryl Streep, you're not going to get parts once you reach a certain age. But with actors, it's not nearly that bad. And I if I had to guess, I'd say Ryan Reynolds is like, what, 44? How old would you say the guy was if you had to place money on it?
Yeah, I'd say mid-40s, 45, something like that.
Anyhow, there's no knowing whether the movie was successful or not, really, because the streaming services, you know, they'll let you know that it was the number one streamed movie in the country, but we don't know how that translates to a box office or, you know, how big a hit that was, kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, they announced that they were going to make sequels to Free Guy, which I think is a mistake. And I wonder if there was any temptation to make a sequel to this, which would also be a mistake. But, you know, what can you do?
I agree. I don't think everything needs a sequel. You know, a lot of movies, like Free Guy, does well enough on its own and sets up a good ending. And I'm sure you could come up with a sequel, but you really don't need to. And then to do a sequel to this one, you know, what are you going to do? The Mom's in Jeopardy or something like that?
I mean, yeah, if somebody held a gun to my head and said, write a sequel to Adam Project, I would probably have 12-year-old, or at this point, 14-year-old Adam go to 2050. He goes to the future with the Ryan Reynolds version.
Right, yeah, that's true.
Or, you know, his future wife comes back in time and says, you've got to help me save yourself. But you know, I don't want them to do it, so I don't know why I'm wasting my my energy talking about it. yeah, I wish that I had liked the movie more. I thought that I would, and I had seen the trailers. But ultimately, once it was over, I felt like it was really big and loud and somewhat emptier than I wanted it to be. And so I was glad that I hadn't spent $10 a ticket to take me and my two nephews to see it in a town halfway across the state, too. You know, it worked out for me that we just watched it for free on television.
Yeah, yeah. So at what point did the movie start to lose you? Was it when Zoe Saldana showed up or when they went to 2018 or...
You know, I still was enjoying it during all of that. I really liked the Zoe Saldana stuff, as little as there was. And then he goes back in time and they go and meet his dad. And one of the very first things that he does is he punches his dad in the face. And I was like, whoa, I did not expect that to happen. But it shows, you know, like how much resentment he has for this guy. And just he hasn't got any patience for the scientist nerd that his dad is. Which I found really interesting. It wasn't until, you know, just it all comes together at that building at the outside with the drone and all the stormtroopers and the kung fu fighting and all that stuff, which I didn't need. I didn't want any of that. If it had just been a much, much more low-key, low-stakes, personal fight, and it's Catherine Keener and maybe her one enforcer are from the future. But instead they had just like faceless army soldiers with them who, you know, it was okay that you killed them because they weren't really people. They might as well have been Cylons or something.
Yeah.
Just that last act is what lost me. And
or it could have been all about the dad's death. You know, maybe they could have prevented that or something like that. That's what changed everything, is Saurian came back and killed their dad. And then it wouldn't have had to be about the science and the experiment. Well, they would have probably had to call it something else, but but that would have been more in line with a running theme of family and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then you could have involved Jennifer Garner more in that plot line, because she would have had a stake in it too.
See, I would really have liked to have seen that movie. And, you know, it's just like, he won't listen to us. What are we going to do? And it's like, maybe he'll listen to Mom.
Yeah.
And so we have to explain to Mom who we are. and you know, I'm liking that idea a lot.
Yeah.
And there was that aspect, of course, in Back to the Future, because Doc Brown is killed right when Marty goes back into 1955. And then, you know, he's warning him that something happens to you in 1985. And he's like, no, you know, there would be dire consequences if I, man can't know too much about his own future. I refuse to accept the responsibility, all this stuff. And he writes him the letter and all that. And there was a moment where Mark Ruffalo was like that, where he's just like, no, don't tell me what happens to me. No. It's important that, you know, a man can't know too, you know, the quantum physics says and all that. And I think it might be at that point where Ryan Reynolds punches him in the face. But yeah, you just nailed it. I like the idea of just having it have personal stakes more than the whole world is writing on this, which, you know, is valid in certain kinds of movies. But that's not what I would have responded to in this. Plus, we never saw the dystopian future. We didn't see just the awfulness of his world that we want to undo.
Yeah. And there was so much at the beginning between the two Adams that I really responded to that. And so did you. So, you know, they could have kept that vibe going. But it totally shifts when Zoe Saldana shows up. But I enjoyed her in the movie and the connection between him and her. And yeah, I guess not sure about what else to say about that.
Well, too many cooks ruins the broth is what I'm saying on this.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that that's who's to blame. It's possible that Sean Levy is to blame, because there was plenty of fighting and kung fu and explosions in Free Guy as well. And almost to the point where it starts to overshadow the smaller personal aspects that I loved so much in that movie. But I felt like it was much more balanced. And so, you know, that's just my opinion. If somebody else watched it and they absolutely loved every moment of it, I would be interested to hear what spoke to them and what didn't. You know, this almost feels like one of those movies where the book was better. Oh, if you had just read the book, because all the scenes that you liked were from the book. But no, it's not based on a book. I do appreciate you sitting down and watching it with me.
Yeah.
And us doing an episode about it. It's the second time we've done something new. That, you know, they're always making direct to streaming movies now. And so it would probably be really easy to every third movie or fourth movie do one of those.
It would be, yeah. Pick a streaming service and see what their latest original movie is. And we will get to the
Wasp Woman?
Third Man.
Oh, you got my hopes up there for a second.
Well, we'd like to know what you thought of this movie, if you've seen it. And if you want to contact us, you can send an email to us at journeyintopodcast@gmail.com. You can also call in and leave a message on the voicemail line, which is at 77JInto107. I'm on Twitter and on Facebook at JourneyInto or Marshall Latham. Rish is on there as Rish Outfield. So you can reach out to us there as well. There is a Patreon for this podcast and all the Journey Into stuff that I do. If you go to patreon.com/journeyinto, you can check it out and see what we have there. You get lots of early episodes and extra episodes and personal addresses and little tidbits here and there for just $1 a month. And then I have some other special podcasts that I do at $3 and $5. I'd love to have you support the show over there. And you can also support Rish on his Patreon. And he has his own podcast and stories that he reads and his own stories that he presents and talking about different things. You can go over there at patreon.com/RishOutfield. There's a good backlog of all kinds of things there. But I guess for us, that's a wrap. Like you said, I appreciate getting together again. It's been a while. So it's good to get together with you and talk about another movie. And I guess we'll have to get back on track and on doing this on a regular basis. So.
Well, yeah. What was your goal?
Well, I think 9 or 10 was what we were hoping for this year for Outfield Excursions. So we missed January and February. So I guess we'll have to step it up a little bit.
Okay. Well, we can. Once the weather gets warm, I tend to watch more movies, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah, watch more on the big screen and just watching older movies at home, too.
All right. Well, hey,
all right.
Thank you for wasting another evening with me. And thank you for those people who've listened all the way to the end. Good luck in the future. We are all interested in the future, for that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives.
True, true. All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Wow. You really want to claim this audio as your own? You are dark, man. You can't, you moron. This podcast is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives license. No, you can't make money off this audio. No, you can't alter it either. When I say Creative Commons, what does your brain hear? Chocolate? But please, feel free to share this podcast with everyone. And remember this. Boys always come back to their mamas.
I feel like Amblin showed that a movie could pair high concept and relatable feeling, that it could use technology to provide spectacular visuals, but always be anchored in human themes, human relationships, and relatable issues. So E.T. is about an alien, but it's really about loneliness. And Back to the Future is a fun ride, but it's also about getting to understand your parents when they were a teenager like you. These are rich ideas that are in the heart of a high concept. And that, to me, is what makes Amblin so lasting and iconic. The Jen Garner, Ryan Reynolds bar scene, everybody talks about.
Is that affirming as a filmmaker? Incredibly. That's what we're connecting to?
But you know why? Because it's easy to get people with flash. But it's harder to get people with quiet and with simplicity and with feeling. And some days you go to work to flex your muscles and show your director flash. But some days, like that day at the bar, you go and you know when to shut up, get out of the way, roll the cameras, let the actors and the writing do their thing. And in that bar, that's exactly what happened. That's my love. That's my love. Let my love open the door. 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 When tragedy befalls you, don't let it drag you down. Love can't cure your problem. You're so lucky I'm around. Let my
Don't touch that.
I was just looking.
Don't touch my stuff.
Is this a lightsaber?
No, it's not a lightsaber. Okay. Enough with the bat already, all right? If I wanted to hurt you, I'd have done it already. Because if I'm being perfectly honest with myself, you have a very punchable face.